morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Thursday, February the 3rd, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. At least 60 people were killed in a militia attack on Wednesday at a displaced persons camp in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
The armed group named CODECO attacked the Plain Savo IDP camp in Bahema Bajare Chiefdom in the territory of Jugu.
Sabiti Jaffa Katante in Eastern Goma, DRC. More with him ahead in the show. And villagers in Zimbabwe say a Chinese mining company has told them they will have to leave their homes to make way for a granite quarry.
In order to help the communities, we are raising awareness on environmental issues, and then we also take matters to court as a last resort.
And Uganda and Tanzania have signed a $10 billion drilling and pipeline project with Chinese and French oil companies. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, at least 60 people were killed in a militia attack early on Wednesday at an internally displaced camp in the eastern DRC. Reports say the attack was carried out by a local militia known as CODECO, whose fighters are drawn mainly from the Lendu farming community. They targeted the Hema herders in the camp. The areas of Ituri and North Kivu province have been under a state of siege since last year, due to the rampant violence in the region. Sabiti Jaffa Alkatante is a reporter based in Goma in the eastern DRC. He tells me that the CODECO militia of the Lendu people has long been in conflict with the Hema people in the area.
The armed group named CODECO attacked in the night of February 1st to 2nd the Plain Savo IDP camp in Bahema Bajare Chiefdom in the territory of Jugu, in the province of Ituri. This camp is home to 24,000 people, and according to the local civil society, more than 60 people were killed and more than 50 were injured.
Sabiti, do the authorities know why these people in the camps were targeted by the CODECO militia?
There is a problem in Ituri province, you know. The conflict between Lendu and Hema people dates back several decades. It has often been linked to identity and the lack of tolerance and acceptance of one and other, because the Lendu community claims to be the originate of the region and treat the Hema as invading migrants. And that violence is since long time and has already sent some leaders in the International Criminal Court. But the last 3 year violences has pushed more than 2 million people to flee their villages and live in IDP camps. And this attack against these camps show that the situation is escaping the control of Congolese authorities, because according to NGOs, at least 1,200 civilians were killed in Ituri province just in the last year.
That was Sabiti Jaffa Alkatante. I reached him in Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Guinea-Bissau's President Umaru Sissoko Embalo survived an attempted coup on Tuesday, but said many of his security forces had been killed as they repelled the attack. He said that the coup attempt may have been linked to drug trafficking. In a Facebook post, President Embalo reassured citizens that his government had not been overthrown by an armed group, saying in a video that the foiled coup was an attempt to kill him, the prime minister, and all his cabinet. There is still speculation on who is behind the coup attempt and what exactly the president meant by linking the coup to drug trafficking. For more on this situation, I am joined by Alvaro Lugero Andrade, managing editor with VOA's Portuguese service. I asked him if Embalo's government had announced any specifics who is behind the attack.
No, 24 hours after the coup attempt, we have no idea. The government spokesman, Fernando Vaz, in 6 minutes, he read a statement. Again, he linked the authors of the coup attempt with drug dealers, but without names, leaders, nobody. He said 11 people had died, 7 of whom were military personnel who defended the president, 3 of his personal security and ministers, and 1 police and 3 civilians who sided with the coup plotters. The spokesperson added that the group had strong means, which indicates that it has financial support, but he did not show any evidence. No photos of the interior of the governance building have been released. I spoke early to the opposition leader and former presidential candidate, Domingos Simões Pereira, and who called for a rigorous investigation to find out who is behind the coup attempt. But he recalled that there is a political crisis in the government. 1 week ago, the president changed the government, some members of the cabinet, and the party of the prime minister didn't agree with. No rebel leader was introduced, and but opposition parties and opinion makers in Bissau say the government has to show the evidence. Also, the army did not comment.
Now, Embalo's government is linking this to drug trafficking, clearly. He said it yesterday, and today his spokesperson said it. Is drug trafficking a major issue in Guinea-Bissau?
Yeah, it's a major issue in Guinea-Bissau, but in his presidency, we didn't see any evidence again the traffic drugs in Guinea-Bissau. When nobody was detained, just 2 or 3 guys in Bissau in the summer depot, but with a minor quantity of drugs. But we don't have information about persecution, drug trafficking.
That was Alvaro Ruggiero Andrade, managing editor with VOA's Portuguese service. There's clearly much more that we don't know about this coup attempt in Guinea-Bissau, but we'll keep following up on this story and update you right here on Daybreak Africa. 4 people were killed on Wednesday after their vehicle struck an improvised explosive device in Wajir County in northeastern Kenya. The attack comes 2 days after another assault in neighboring Mandera County that left more than 7 people dead and 14 hospitalized. Police say that the deceased were traveling in a Land Cruiser near the Kenya-Somali border when it ran over the improvised device. Maureen Ojambo has more on this story.
Security has been beefed up in many parts of Kenya as Al-Shabaab militants intensify attacks against civilians, security officers and communication infrastructure in Kenya's northeastern counties, disrupting key services like education and health. On Wednesday, 4 people died after their vehicle was hit by an improvised device in northeastern county of Wajir. The incident happened just 2 days after another assault on Monday in a neighboring town that left 10 people dead when their bus was hit by a similar bomb along a major highway which neighbors Somalia. Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i is urging Kenyans to be vigilant.
The challenges that we have in the region related to terror or terrorism, as it were, are real. And I have to be very frank with the people of Kenya and say this. We have to be very cautious. We have heightened our level of security in certain parts of our country because of this.
The outgoing Northeastern Regional Police Boss Rono Bunei says response teams are on the ground pursuing those behind the latest violence.
In fact, when the incident happened, the GHU officers was about 200 meters from the scene. They were on foot patrol. So in fact, they are the ones who responded immediately because they had explosion. They saw the vehicle passing.
Politicians from northeastern Kenya are asking the government to ensure the safety of all citizens. Mandera East Member of Parliament Omar Malim says the area is a trouble spot for attacks and the government should look into the security of the whole region.
This is the same site where a number of officers, police officers, lost their lives a few months ago. We are, as leaders of this county, we are requesting, or rather asking the President of the Republic of Kenya to invoke his powers to ensure Kenya Defense Forces safeguard the territorial integrity of this nation.
At the same time, 6 terror suspects were arraigned Wednesday in a Kajiado court hours after their arrest. The suspects were apprehended Tuesday night by officers of the local Directorate of Criminal Investigations. Among those arrested at a roadblock in Loitoktok near the Kenya-Tanzania border were Abdullahi Abdi Hamud, Abdino Mahmud Hassan, Abdirahman Abdullahi Jamal, Abdirahman Mohamed Abbas, Yusuf Hussein Mohamed, and Abdullahi Shukri. The suspects will remain in police custody for the next 10 days to allow the Directorate of Criminal Investigations to conclude their probe. Foreign Affairs Cabinet Secretary Rachel Mamo is calling on the foreign nations to collaborate and help Kenya fight terrorism.
Partnership in all our countries to embrace and tackle the challenges of the day in a spirit of collaboration and in a spirit of partnership.
These consecutive attacks come after a terror warning issued by various Western governments, including the US, France, and the Dutch. The foreign governments cautioned that attacks would happen over last weekend, but Kenyan authorities denied any knowledge, saying they were ready to tame any such plans. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Voice of America.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Villagers in Zimbabwe say a Chinese mining company has told them they will have to leave their homes to make way for a granite quarry. The company denies plans to forcibly move the villagers, but a lack of transparency has many people feeling that they will be pushed out of their ancestral lands. Columbus Mavunga reports from Mutoko in Zimbabwe.
Some villagers in Zimbabwe's Mutoko district say they are not sure what the future holds now that Chinese companies such as Jinding Mining are exploring quarry mining in the region. Most are reluctant to even talk about it for fear of retaliation. But this 42-year-old farmer who asked that his name be withheld is eager to speak about the company's plan to mine an area that stretches across 180 hectares and includes some of their homes. He says the area they want is where we live and where our cattle graze. It's our source of income. We wonder where we will go. The area they want is too huge. Our ancestors' graves are there too. We wonder where they will relocate them, says the 42-year-old farmer. Activists say more than 50 families could be forced out by one mining company alone. Richard Nwe of the Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association says his group plans to ask the courts to prevent the eviction of villagers.
In order to help the communities, we are raising awareness on environmental issues. We are researching on these issues to inform legal reform. And then we also take matters to court as a last resort to have their remedies addressed or issues addressed.
An environmental impact report by Jinding Mining has addressed the concerns of villagers, says Amukela Zidange from Zimbabwe's Environmental Management Agency.
What we only do as the agency is to take the report that is brought by the project owner. We go through it. We verify whether what is being indicated in the report that consultations were done were really done. We actually go to the ground and triangulate whether what is in the report is actually what took place on the ground.
The farmer who spoke to VOA said the Jinding company asked no ordinary people about their concerns over the mining project, but only the local leaders. Officials at Jinding and the Chinese embassy in Zimbabwe were not available for comment. In a statement, the embassy said Chinese investors in Zimbabwe are working for the betterment of the country. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mutoko, Zimbabwe.
Uganda and Tanzania have signed a deal with Chinese and French oil companies this week, finalizing terms of a $10 billion drilling and pipeline project. The project's backers say that it will usher in economic development across the region. But Ugandan activists say complaints from communities affected by the project are not being heard. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Civil society organizations have raised red flags again one day after Ugandan and Tanzanian officials put ink to paper for what they call the final investment decision.
I declare the final investment decision for the Lake Albert Development Projects, the Lenga, Kingfisher and Yakob projects.
The move opens the way for construction and development of the East African crude oil pipeline, connecting future oil fields in Uganda to the Tanzanian port city of Tanga. However, Ugandan civil society organizations under the umbrella Stop EACOP say the $3.5 billion project violates the rights of communities around Lake Albert, where oil drilling will take place. In 2021, the NGO Africa Institute for Energy Governance, which is providing legal support to the affected communities, was raided twice for allegedly operating without a license. The NGO's executive director, Dickens Kamgisha, says the attacks were meant to silence them for demanding to see key documents and raising issues such as people's property rights. Kamgisha tells VOA that locals may get compensated for the loss of their property, but were not given much chance to negotiate.
They are being forced to open bank accounts, but even those who have opened, they don't receive the money. Many people haven't agreed on the compensation rates, but they are being told you have to receive whatever is available. So the communities are still aggrieved. There are no grievance handling mechanisms. The courts are not functioning. So the people are helpless. People have been made to become even poorer and more miserable and desperate.
This week's agreement was signed between Uganda, Tanzania, the French company Total Energies, and the China National Offshore Oil Corporation. Total Energies faces a lawsuit in France for its failure to prevent human rights violations and environmental damage linked to the project. The drilling and pipeline have been delayed for years, and Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni noted that one reason for the delay was the pressure put on Total Energies by civil society groups. Museveni has been dismissive of the groups, describing members as jobless people moving aimlessly.
They go and campaign, say, Ugandans are not allowing NGOs to inspect the petroleum operations in Lake Albert. They're hiding something. So I appeal to the Ugandans and to the local government in Burisa, in the Chikwebe, in Noya, let the NGOs go and sleep in the bush if they want.
When completed, the pipeline is expected to carry about 60,000 barrels of oil to Tanzania per day. Tanzania's Vice President Philip Mpango expressed hope all parties will adhere to labor and environmental laws.
I'm therefore looking forward to hear that all partners are committed to implement this project in an exemplary manner, taking into consideration the ecology as well as local community rights.
Uganda's oil deposits were first discovered in 2006 and are estimated at 6.5 billion barrels. Assuming the drilling and pipeline go ahead, exports are expected to begin in 2025. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
UN agencies in Malawi have started providing aid to victims from Tropical Storm Anna, which killed scores of people across southeastern Africa and left tens of thousands homeless. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, has provided personal hygiene and water treatment kits to approximately 15,000 people. But Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera says more assistance is needed, as Lamek Masina reports from Chikawa in Malawi.
The latest report from Malawi's Department of Disaster Management says the floods killed 33 people, displaced more than 100,000, and affected nearly 200,000 households in the country. The storm also damaged at least 19 health facilities, destroying medicines and cold chain equipment. Muhammad Faw is UNICEF's regional director for East and Southern Africa. He is in Malawi visiting flood hit areas.
For the moment, our focus, of course, is on life-saving commodities, and namely those that help for water, those help for sanitation, non-food item, probably also some tent, latrines, cleaning staff also, because I'm sure that with the water level dropping, resettlement will be a challenge.
Four notes that the destruction of water and sanitation facilities puts children and their families at risk of waterborne diseases such as cholera. Meanwhile, the World Food Programme announced Wednesday that it has set aside an initial amount of $500,000 for relief assistance to the flood victims. Paul Turnbull is the WFP country director in Malawi.
As part of our immediate response, WFP is providing corn soya blend to some 21,000 households, around 95,000 people, in the four most affected districts of Jikwawa, Mulanje, Nsanje, and Palombe. Distribution started yesterday, the 1st of February.
Turnbull added the WFP is currently prioritizing displaced people living in temporary shelters as it looks for additional resources to scale up its response. The head of the Department of Disaster Management, Charles Galemba, told a press conference Tuesday that the relief efforts are hampered by lack of funding despite several government appeals for financial assistance. During his tour to affected areas Tuesday, President Lazarus Chakwera called for more assistance to help thousands of Malawians affected by floods in over half of the country's 28 districts. Chakwera says as we continue asking for more assistance from our partners, we should also make sure that in our national budget this year, we should allocate some to help rebuild public infrastructures destroyed by the storm. Tropical Storm Anna also killed at least 20 people in Mozambique and 48 people in Madagascar. The Malawian president said he will soon meet with African Union heads of state to ask for support in aiding areas affected by the storm. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Chikwawa, Malawi.
A Chinese official in Nigeria says Beijing plans to invest $300 billion in Africa to increase African exports and help close the large trade gap with China. China's plans for more investment in Africa have been welcomed by some, but many critics worry about Africa's growing debt with Beijing, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja in Nigeria.
The recent signing of a multi-billion dollar partnership between China and Africa marks a major step in China's effort to spend more money in Africa in nine industrial sectors, including trade, digital innovation, medical, poverty reduction, culture, and peace and security. A Chinese official, China-Africa Business Council head Diana Chen, signed a memorandum of understanding with Lagos Chamber of Commerce officials last week in Lagos. Chen said the $300 billion will be invested in Africa over the next 3 years. Many experts welcomed the development and say it could increase the local manufacturing and export capacity of indigenous Nigerian and African brands. Charles Anunaji is the director of the Center for China Studies in Abuja.
It's not just in Lagos, it's been holding across Africa. There have been discussions on the new opportunities of China-African cooperation. So the Lagos meeting was one of the follow-ups on that very important meeting in Dakar, where the Chinese president offered a nine program to drive China-African cooperation to the next level. For me, this is a very important, landmark in China-African cooperation.
China is Africa's biggest trading partner with over $30 billion in trade volume, surpassing the United States and Europe. Nigeria is one of China's largest trading partners in Africa. Onunaiji says the new partnership is expected to improve Africa's trade with China, which analysts say is lopsided. Since 2018, Chinese authorities began hosting the China-Africa Economic and Trade Expo in Changsha City in the central China province, with the stated aim of exposing African products to the Chinese market. While more African businesses may try to meet a more welcoming Chinese market for their products, many will be watching to see how the new partnership changes the status quo. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you A very good morning, Africa.